Alien is in the building.
We're back.
We got the intro back.
Talking Talk Podcast Season 2, Episode 1. We're back in business. Nick Swimmer and Dennis Rodriguez and Daniel Cormier. And we got a big show for our first one back. We will be joined by the new interim lightweight champion of the world, Dustin Poirier. We will be joined by MMA insider, big-time Knicks fan, Ariel Helwani. But before we can get to those guys, we have to go back to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and talk about UFC 237, where we saw one of the nastiest knockouts that I've seen for a long time, Nick, as Jessica Andrade became the UFC strawweight champion by knocking out Rose Namajunas.
Yeah, and Rose was dominating, and then all of a sudden,
just got caught.
Doink. Yeah, that was a... I mean, Rose looked as good as she's ever looked, and then all of a sudden, Andrade just picked her up, and it was over.
You know, in the first round, you know, I was calling the fight, and I was like, wow, I've never seen Namajunas look better. I mean, the jab was busting her up. Yeah. It seemed as though Jessica was having problems trying to close the distance and find her range. But you knew that Andrade has an ability to push a pace that not many people could keep, and if she got a chance... She had one-punch knockout power, which you don't see much at 115. And also a great ground game and a great ability to wrestle and control the pace. So, and you saw that as the fight went on. First round looked great for Rose. But in round two, Andrade was really starting to come on even before she landed that big takedown. She landed a lot of nice leg kicks, which in turn slowed Rose down enough to where she was able to get in on that shot. And do the power driver, Bacia Stress or whatever her name is, Bacia Stessa or some stuff like that, the power driver.
You know, there's always...
And also just her forward pressure.
Yeah, there was a point where they showed Andrade in the corner, and it's always like when you're watching a fight and someone's all bloody, it always magnifies how much actual damage they've taken. Like, you looked at her and you thought, shit, she's like about to... Her head's about to fall off, right? And all of a sudden they came and went to the corner... And when they wiped all the blood off and splashed some water on her, you realized all of a sudden she looked like 1,000 times better. Like, okay, it's a small cut. Like, she's not out. Like, she's still in this fight. She just has to have – it's just a lot of blood coming from one place. And I remember thinking that and thinking, huh, she seemed like she was so fucked up already, but it's not that bad. And then
– It was a cut over her left eye
where
the blood was coming from.
And then – but you still thought – it was still one of those things where Rose is just so long and she seemed to be, you know – controlling the distance and moving around so much, but
she looked way faster.
Yeah, but
she looked way faster.
It's so much pressure. It seems like when you got the person with the one punch knockout power who just needs to get close to you to either punch you or grab a hold of you. It's just so much pressure to have to be perfect, to constantly circling and jabbing and jabbing and coming in and out. And it just feels like it's always stressful to watch when you're well, in this case, I wasn't rooting for anyone, but when you're rooting for a guy who's fighting the guy with one punch power, it's like so stressful because you're just like, just fuck, keep going, don't get in, don't get out. And when you're the guy with the one punch power or the girl with the one punch power, you've always got a chance.
You know, Rose was fighting such a tremendous fight, and when Jessica went in to single legger in the first round, Rose grabbed the kimura, right? She got picked up and slammed down, Rose takes the kimura, rolls it into an armbar attempt, and it looked pretty close.
Yeah, if her arm was longer, she would have got her. It was just her arm was too short.
Yes, and she's strong, and she did the correct thing, right? She started trying to slide her elbow above Rose's hips, which is what allowed her to not get the bend in the wrong direction of the elbow. But then on the second attempt, she went to that same takedown. She got to a single leg. If she would have tried to kimura Rose, she would have, when Rose was trying to kimura her, if she would have lifted her and slammed her down, it would have given Rose the momentum to either elevate her with her legs and then attack the kimura or end up in the top position. So what Jessica did was very smart. She rolled her head to the outside. So from putting her right ear on Rose's belly, She rolled her head to the opposite side, put her left ear up against Rose's hip. Now you've changed the angle of the throw, right? So the right ear against the belly. If she lifts and slams her backwards, Rose falls on her back. And by falling on her back with the arm, she would just elevate, elevate, elevate till Jessica would roll to her back or get submitted with a Kimura. But then when she moved her head outside and she put it on the hip, now Rose is going away from Jessica's body. Now Jessica, as she lifts her, is not going to fall on top of Rose to where Rose can roll her. She's going to throw her away from her. Same exact takedown I do on all those guys when I flip them. But she held on to the submission, which kept her in place. That's why when you see me do that to Gustafson and Josh Barnett and those guys, their arms are kind of doing like this, like they're swimming. Because they don't know where their body's going. So it makes them roll across their back and do a front flip. If Rose would have let go, she would have did that front flip. Because Jessica took her elbow really deep. Her right elbow went deep between the legs of Rose and lifted her up and just spiked her. And if she would have let go of that wrist, she would have been able to fall on the back of her shoulders and did like a forward roll. Momentum would have took her all the way through, but because she held on to the submission, she landed right on top of her head and knocked herself out.
Now, in that position,
or got knocked out.
In that position, is she thinking like, I'm slamming you on your head, or is she just thinking I'm going to slam you and she's not sure if you're going to land on your head, or you're like, you know, like, are you just trying to slam the person and see what happens, or is she trying to slam them on their head?
I think she's just going to the finish. Like, the finish will... The finish is like a chain of events, right? You either lift, you either run across to a double leg. She couldn't run a double leg because Rose had her arm, the Kimura arm. So she had to go to that specific finish. She couldn't run the pipe, which is sitting Rose to her butt, because then again, her body would fall on top of Rose and Rose would elevate her. So her only avenue to that finish was to go through the lift. And Rose ended up falling, and she ended up putting her on her head. But that was just really high-level skill by Jessica and a great adjustment to roll the head outside into a high crotch position as opposed to staying in a single leg. And it was truly, truly amazing to see a young lady who has worked so hard finally accomplish that goal. Because remember, Jessica used to fight 135. Yeah. She was severely undersized. But she got herself down to her more natural weight, and now she's the most aggressive physical fighter in that division.
What – So it was both of them looked great in that fight. So what were you surprised or as a champion, what are you thinking when Rose is like, oh, this is kind of a big relief. Was it her concussion talking? Was it something a lot of people go through or what? Or you?
I spoke to her. Yeah. I spoke to her on the plane. We flew home together. And she was very open about just how stressful this last year has been on her. Like, it's been a hard year for Rose Namajunas, you know, from the incident down in Brooklyn. To some injuries she may have had, to just life. I mean, it's been a hard year. And as a fighter, not wanting to deal with a lot of the extra that comes with a champion that's on the shelf, they start trying to introduce interim titles, and they start trying to do all these other things. And she had a hard year in that sense, man. So when the belt was gone, it was like, now I can go get back to me a little bit. And I said right away, I didn't understand her thought process.
Yeah, on the broadcast, you were like, you were baffled.
I was baffled because for my whole entire life, I've chased those big goals, right? And as I accomplished them, the last thing I want is to see them go in a different direction. But now, after talking to Rose and Pat for an hour before we took off, I'm like, I get it. I get it for you, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I could ever feel that way. But I get it for Rose. You know, Rose has dealt with a lot in her life and also over the course of the last year. So I get it. I get why she would say, you know, I love this thing and I love this life that I've gained. But if it's gone, it's gone. I'm not going to bug out on it. But I think we got to give her some time. Yeah. We got to give her some time to see the value that she puts in not only fighting for the belt, but fighting altogether. She was talking about retirement and all this stuff. And,
yeah,
but she's so good at it, right? She's so good at fighting.
Amazing, and she keeps getting better.
If she walked away,
it keeps getting better. I couldn't figure out. Does she mean like she's a relief she won't have to fight, or is it just I want to fight? I don't care about. I've been the champion. I don't care about being the champion. I just want to fight and not have to deal with all the extracurricular stuff.
I just think there's a lot that comes with being a champion, it takes a certain mentality to really want to hold on to that. And right now, Rose is trying to find her place because she's happy, man. Like, I was talking to her and Pat, and I'm like, what do you guys do? And they're like, we just kind of hang out, man, just together. They got some birds. They got a garden. They love their garden.
Yeah.
And that's what they were looking forward to. They were like, we don't watch much TV. I was like, well, what do you guys do? You know, like, what do you do all day? Rose cooks. She gave us some beef jerky she made. It was fucking phenomenal. I'm serious. We're on the plane eating fucking Rose Namajunas beef jerky. It was fucking crazy. It was good. She makes beef jerky. They sit in the garden. They sit. They just kick back. They're just like, they go, they just kick back. And I'm still, I told Pat, I said it before I'm done, but I'm going to find out what you guys do with your days. I go because I wake up in the morning, I play video games, I watch TV, drink my coffee, go to practice, come home, teach wrestling from 3 to 7. Then I come home and I eat dinner with my family. And then before I go to bed, I watch more TV. I go, but you guys don't. He goes, nope. He goes, we get up in the morning, we turn on some music, and we just kind of hang out. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
He said, we talk a lot.
I think
they talk a lot.
Yeah.
I said, shit. You guys are in a much better relationship than a lot of people because most people don't talk to their significant other. He goes, we just sit and we talk.
Wow.
I was like, wow.
That's good
to
hear.
So I think she'll be okay. I just think that Rose needs to find what she wants to do in this whole fight game, you know, but they're happy, they're healthy, and if they're, you know, successful, man, that's like, that was like the overwhelming theme of the conversation, which was good.
Speaking of champs, I mean, you were, you know, known as the double champ, but since our last podcast, you're really the triple champ. You got some wrestling championships, right?
Yes, man, my team did good. The Gilroy High School Mustangs, we won the Five Counties Tournament, won our conference, and we got second in the state of California. So it's a big, big, big accomplishment. And then our elementary school team, middle school team, won the Reno World Championships for the 12 and under division too. So we are trending up as we head into season number two with me as the coach at Gilroy and also my AKA team. So it's going good, man. Better than I ever could have imagined. We had a state champion.
Yeah,
we had three kids in the state finals and seven kids placed in the top eight, which is a record for the school. So,
I don't know how
all the records that the school had, we've beaten them, right? So, we equaled the state placers they had last year. We were second in the state as they were the year prior, but we graduated two state champions and a state runner up, and we still got second and outscored last year's team without. Probably one of our best wrestlers. He didn't get to wrestle the postseason. So we did that without two of our best wrestlers, actually. But the one kid that wrestled in place of the other guy was a freshman, and he just did phenomenal. He was like in the round of 12 as a freshman. So at our conference tournament, last year's team had 35 or 38 pins. It was a record. This year we had 44 pins in that one tournament. So we scored more team points. Like, we just did we had a special season. And I attribute that to the great kids that I'm coaching, and also my assistant coaches, DeRon Wynn, Bill Newton, Jason Villarreal, Sean Bunch, just Marco Sanchez, who was also the principal. It was just as good as I could have ever hoped for.
Yeah, I don't know how you have time to watch so much TV. So, I mean, moving forward, like, do you have to work your schedule around the coaching? Like, will you probably not see fights during the peak?
You know, last year I didn't fight during the season, but I needed a break, right? I fought in November. I fought right before the season started, and then I was hurt. You know, I had back surgery, so I couldn't fight anyways. I was out for a while. So
was it secret?
I had to take some time to get better. It was. Yeah, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want. I like when people say stuff like you're dodging Stipe and you're afraid and this, because no one knows that we have life going on around us. You know, like, everybody sees us as these public figures, but we're doing so much in life. I've got a family. I've got my own things going all the time. My businesses, that I have life to live. You know, the UFC is just a part of it.
I mean, the only thing that, you know, really suffered from the life you live is this podcast, right, Dennis? I mean, we were kind of like the forgotten We were the forgotten thing. Life got too busy for us.
I know. I had to dust off the computer and everything.
It got crazy for a while, but we're back. Right. Hey, listen. I want to go back to UFC 237 before Dustin calls in. Did you ever think there would be a time that you watched a fight and BJ Penn, Jose Aldo, and Anderson Silva all lost on the same night? Think about that.
That was rough.
Yeah,
that was rough.
Could you imagine like a time back in 2010 where I would tell you all three of those guys would lose the very same night?
In Brazil.
Yeah.
In Brazil.
And in 2010, if you told us they'd be all fighting in 2019, that'd be amazing too.
They're all still fighting.
Yeah, that was crazy. You felt for the Brazilian fans.
Yeah.
I mean, in the main event, at least they got something, but otherwise they're sitting there watching not go so well for them.
Yeah.
They all lost. Like, it was, I remember the first time we went to Brazil, it was like the Brazilian fighters went 12-0. And this time, unless they were fighting each other, almost all the Brazilian guys lost, except for Jessica Andrade. Aldo was a weird fight.
He just seemed kind of like he just couldn't get started.
He couldn't go. And he said it after the fight. He goes, I've never fought so bad in my entire life. Like, he was as confused as everybody watching it was. It was
kind of like Woodley against Usman. It's like, I guess, I mean, I have no idea, but I guess you just get in there sometimes and you just not, it's just.
Sometimes you don't feel
you're
it.
You're not feeling it.
Tyron told me that. Tyron said, he goes, like, you could look at my eyes. He was like, I just wasn't in that moment. You know, he was like, I just wasn't there. I was somewhere else at the worst possible time. It's sad, you know, to watch a guy lose their belt when they're just not there, or watch a legend like Jose Aldo fight in the way that he did on Saturday. It's rough. It's rough to watch.
And then, what's the guy's name? Volkanovski?
Volkanovski.
And he's now in a hospital in Chile.
What's wrong with him?
His foot turned red and it started to swell up and he started to feel sick and they landed the plane in Chile and the doctor saw him at the airport and they took him to the hospital.
This guy can be okay.
Some kind of infection or something.
Jesus. Hey, Michael Bisping, my guy Bisping yesterday, I left him at the airport. He's supposed to leave at 6 a.m. on Sunday. I run into old Mikey. Mikey's at the airport in the middle of the night because he was in Brazil for more than 15 hours. He was going to Africa or something to do a movie. But because he was in Brazil for more than 15 hours, he had to test for like yellow fever or some crazy shit like that.
Oh, shit.
So they sent his ass back to the hotel. He was just at the hotel and then in the airport all night. So going to Brazil is not as simple as just going to Brazil and getting out. There's usually something that comes with it. But I mean, I enjoyed it. Beautiful place. Great fights. And a new champion in Jessica Andrade.
Yeah, that was a great night of fights.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Speaking of we got the diamond pretty soon.
Yes, yes. Dustin's about to call in. And it's been awesome to watch his rise and watch him in the championship fight with Holloway. But not only that one, but the fights with Alvarez and Gaethje, and just watching an evolution of a guy that has been around forever, truly accomplish one of his ultimate goals, has been so fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, him walking, when he was walking from the octagon to the back, and he just couldn't control himself. He's just like, they could never take this, and just screaming. You know,
yeah.
Like, if you can tell it, like, yeah, you haven't seen many guys where it seemed to mean that much to him. I mean, it means a lot to everyone, but he was like, he couldn't even contain himself. He was just like so proud.
Yeah, he was excited about becoming the champ. I know the whole Acadiana Parish in Lafayette, Louisiana celebrated for a long time, and rightfully so. He deserved it. And with that, let's welcome him in, the Diamond Dustin Poirier. Now, we are joined by the new UFC interim lightweight champion. He is the crown prince of Lafayette, Louisiana. He can't be the king because I'm the king. No, I'm just kidding. He's the new king of Lafayette. The diamond, they say they last forever. Dustin Poirier, thank you for joining the Talk to Talker podcast.
DC, thanks for having me on, man. Good to talk to you.
My man. So, Dustin, in order to go forward, we have to go backwards. And that's back to Atlanta, Georgia, where you won that title. I mean, you've been fighting for a really long time. How did it feel when Dana wrapped that belt around your waist?
man, DC, it felt incredible. As a young fighter and just as a fighter in general, you dream of that day. Every night, you know, when I lay down and close my eyes and hope to make it a reality one day to get that belt wrapped around my waist, you know, the way it felt there in person in the moment felt better than I ever could have dreamed of or ever could have envisioned this feeling, man. It felt right. It felt earned. And, you know, I was just proud, man. A very proud moment in my life.
You know, it's so crazy to watch a guy become a champ for the first time, but then to have to do it in the fashion that you did, because it was a war. I mean, you did not have an easy fight. You and Max Holloway laid it all out on the line. Some guys win it, like when Conor won his first belt, 15 seconds knocking out Jose Aldo, you know? Some guys win it in more dominant fashion. You won the fight convincingly, but it was like you had to go through the fire. Do you think that for the style of fighter that you are, it kind of just fit that you had to really bite down? You know, we've spoken personally, and you've said in the fourth round, I was like, you know what, this is where I earn it. And you did. Did you feel that that was like the perfect story for Dustin Poirier?
Yeah, and in a weird way, it wasn't, it wasn't like a territory where I didn't think the fight would go. In my head, going into that fight, I thought it was going to be a tough fight. I thought I was going to have to dig down. You know, I knew there were going to be times that adversity would present itself in those rounds. And that's what fighting is to me, though, Daniel. I expect that every fight.
You know, very rarely do you get a guy that wins a title, and it seemed like everybody was happy. You know, like, there's that bit of excitement when a guy becomes a champ for the first time. But with you, Dustin, because you've been around so long, because you've given such great performances on a consistent basis, it felt like everyone was excited, from the announcers to the fans to the organization. It seemed like everybody was happy that you got your moment. Could you sense that?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you bring that up, but I still sense it. Like, you know, from media, from fans, from the organization, like you said, people like yourself who you know, have done it. It just feels, and I don't know if that's because people have kind of followed my career for such a long time and feel a part of this journey, because, you know, I've been in the WEC since I was a young man, and I had the documentary that came out on Showtime and Netflix when I was a young professional fighter. People might feel more linked to my story because of the long term and the behind the scenes stuff they've seen over the years of fighting. But everybody, you know, like you said, everybody felt like, you know, very appreciative of the moment with me. It felt incredible, man. I'm overwhelmed by all the love and support that I've got.
You know, you started to carry yourself as a champion before you even won the belt with the Good Fight Foundation. Talk about that. I know how much it means to you and your wife, Jolie. Just what you're doing for our hometown is amazing. And I heard that for as well as you did before, when you win a title, the numbers went through the roof.
Yeah, man. We got the Good Fight Foundation. Well, I think this was the biggest platform, obviously, the title fight. I did a lot of media. There was a lot of eyes on it. So I had the biggest platform to share the goal and share my nonprofit that me and my wife have. And it really, you know, took off. I had the most donations. We sold the fight kits. Max donated his gloves. We made a lot of money, and we're going to make this goal a reality, and it's already in the works. They're going to be breaking ground in 6 weeks, start the construction of a playground here at Prairie Elementary School in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I'm just excited to continue to do these types of things for Lafayette and hopefully one day branch out and do bigger things. But right now, the main focus is on the local community, things that I can see happening. And that's what we're going to continue to do, trying to better Lafayette, trying to help people, make as many people smile and feel good as we can through this fight.
Dustin, you got two more people here. DC doesn't usually let us talk, but you got Nick and Dennis. We call ourselves co-hosts. I don't know what DC calls us, but we got
definitely not co-hosts.
We want to jump in here. I got a very important question. Was that Robert Rivetta in your corner with a beard?
You're damn right it was. I was the guy, man.
I was looking.
He's part of the dream team.
No, he's been awesome. He's been on the hype in the diamond for as long as I can remember, and he's always been a huge believer, and I was looking at the TV and I hadn't seen him in a while, and I'm like, I swear that's fucking Robert. And I'm like, no, he's too, I don't know how he like, he's always so worried about being so pretty, and all of a sudden he's got this raggedy beard, and I was like, what did he do?
Rob's a man. He's more than like, he's been a friend of mine. I think he's the only manager I've had since I turned pro. We've been together a long time, ups and downs. He's been more of a, in the last few years of my career, more of a mentor. Of course, he's still a manager, but more of a mentor in business and in decisions. You know, he's just a really good person, who I'm blessed to have around me. And since you win, you know, when you win the bout, DC, I'm sure you know this, when you win the bout, a lot of people start reaching out, a lot of management companies, a lot of sponsorships, a lot of crazy stuff, you know, people pulling me in a bunch of different ways. And I've had a few offers from management companies trying to make me sign and stuff since then.
Coach,
and I got to tell them, you know, I'm loyal. Yeah, man. I'm loyal to the soil. I'm gonna retire with Robert Rivera as my manager.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously it was super excited for you. You could tell after the fight how much it meant to you, but you know, a lot of people forget all the guys behind the scenes, the coaches, managers, training partners, all that. So I was really happy to see Robert get that moment too. So I thought that was pretty cool that you took
him. He's been in my corner, I think, the last 3 or 4 fights. He's been in my corner, and he's my guy, man. He's a huge part of the journey, and you know, he's helped me out a lot and steered me in the right direction a lot. And you know, I'm just, like I said, appreciative to have him around.
Now, speaking of of being your guy, we got DC. He's such a friendly guy, and he's out there making friends all over the place. Were you at all concerned about DC's friendship with Max? And did you think DC was conflicted when he was sitting there? And now coming up, you got Khabib, but he's going to be. You got to wonder about the guy. Is he digging for information? Is he loyal to his? To his hometown, or what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man. I'm glad it's not like boxing where the ring announcers kind of share their scorecard and stuff like that. You know, I don't know what DC had on his scorecard that night.
He might have like a little emoji scorecard on his phone with like a heart.
You're
for each
so
round.
Nick, you're so stupid and such a shit stirrer. Hey, I was actually purposely not going to ask any questions about the next fight. That was just like, I was just going to let it go because Dustin tends to like to throw that out every time we talk. Like, so what you got? What you got, what you got. So it's like, but here comes Nick with his fucking scraggly beard trying to start some shit.
hey, Dustin, it's all good, man. So, this is business we in.
Hey, Dustin, so as we talk about the next fight, you get to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov, which is, you know, undefeated, lightweight champion of the world, guy that's been dominant in so many areas and so many fights. And honestly, after the performance against Conor, you talk about the massive platform you had last time. This will be a bigger platform. How do you prepare for the enormity of the event that you're going to face when you and Khabib fight?
You know, this is going to be crazy. But I don't want to jump the gun because I haven't, you know, I don't have a fight contract yet. And I'm just waiting to find out exactly all the details. But looks like everything's pointing to Abu Dhabi September 7th. It's going to be, you know, a huge show. But I'm going to cross that bridge when I get there. This is just another fight to me, man. This honestly is just another fight to me.
Well, what can you do? Like, if you had a fight where you're like, I got to be, there's certain fights where you've got to be more aggressive, or there's certain fights where you've got to focus on, you know, grappling more than striking. Like, it may be a question that doesn't make any sense, but I'm just trying to relate everything to that in business. And so I was thinking, you know, fighters have to
risk versus reward. D. Yeah, risk versus reward.
Yeah.
I believe it comes down to.
Thanks for summarizing, DC. That was much better than my.
He's a 2-minute fucking question.
I got three. Like, I got 3 words to answer that one.
Dustin, fuck. And then you start going at him, and he gets even more fucking nervous. His asshole puckered so tight. Yeah. Then he starts going in a complete circle.
I think the C in DC stands for Cliff Notes.
Dustin, then you're like, I don't understand what the fuck you're saying. And then he really starts running. Fucking did 2 miles to get to risk versus reward.
Dude, it's early. I'm still working on that coffee. What the hell? It's kind of risk versus reward, it's risk versus reward, but it's also, what are you doing? You know, you've got to lay the foundation so that you're able to take risk, because then it's not, you know, no one risks something just for the sake of risking it. You only risk it for the reward. But if I went in the cage and just started fucking throwing haymakers. That's just stupidity. That's not risk.
Right. I think it comes down to fight IQ and discipline and maturity, just how long you've been around and the making decisions on the fly in there. You know, I've been fighting for a while, and I feel like at this point in my career, I kind of know where I'm at for the most part on the scorecards. I feel like I have a decent understanding of what's going on when I'm in there. And you know, like risk versus reward, like you guys are talking about, I try to finish these fights. And because of that, I've been put on the other side. You know, I've risked it and come out on the losing side because I've risked it all. But I finish these guys as well. There's a fine line between risking too much or putting yourself in harm's way to get the finish. But I'd rather fight this way. I don't want to jab and circle and win decisions. I'm trying to hurt these guys and put these guys away. That's what fighting is to me. Of course, there's times where you need to be a little bit, you know, more cautious and careful and try to change the momentum of a fight. And then you got to pick your shots and slow around down here and there. But at the end of the fight, when the fight's totaled up, I'm trying to finish you. So that's just how I fight, man.
It seems like it's not just how you fight. Like, so at the end of the fight, you talked about there was times where, you know, you didn't know if you would, you know, you needed help like pushing through and keeping going. Like, so I guess that ties into the risk reward too. Like, were there points where you thought like, I don't know if this is worth it. I don't know if I'll ever get to the top or if I'll get the chance, or there's, you know, so many politics and you guys don't have complete control of who you fight next or what opportunities are given to you. Was that a recent thing or how was that? And what did you do to kind of get your mind right?
A little bit before this last fight, I kind of got frustrated with you know, just the years of and the work that I put in. I felt overlooked a little bit. I felt, you know, I try to stay pretty optimistic and pretty positive. I try not to let negative thoughts creep in. But, you know, I felt like I was being punished for, I'm in the lightweight division. I'm on a streak. I've fought everybody. I've, you know, beat former champions in main events like three times in a row before this fight. And I just felt like I earned a shot at the title. And I felt like I was being punished by the organization because of other guys' actions. I felt like I'm sitting on the sideline. I might have to fight a few more guys before I get a title shot because these two guys are suspended and I don't know when they're coming back. And if they do come back, they might rematch and it holds up the division even longer. The division's already top heavy. I just felt like I'd done the work and haven't got a crack, you know, haven't got my due. But like I said, man, I just stayed positive. I was out there in Florida training, didn't even have a fight coming up. I just felt like I needed to be there, and I got the call to fight for the title. So the interim title was Max. So everything worked out. Everything happens for a reason. I just stayed the path, man.
You know, Dustin, I got to say this. Back in the day, and I feel this is probably one of the biggest mistakes that we ever made was at the American Kickboxing Academy, you talk about everything working out the right way. But do you remember when I went down to Tim Crater's gym down there in Lafayette back in the day? Tim said, I have this kid.
That day I double-legged
you? Yeah, right. Yeah, that's like running through a brick wall. But you did hit. You did kind of piece me up with those left hands a little bit. I was like, yo, this kid can box. I was like, this dude can box. He's small, but he can really box. Tim called me, and he goes, can Dustin come up and train with you guys in San Jose? And I said, yes. But then Bob Cook didn't pull the trigger fast enough. And then you ended up going down to the American Top Team, which is not you going as a secondary option. You probably would have did them both. But think about that now. If you came back then, when we first talked about it, this had to be 2012. You were just getting into the UFC, WEC. You and Habib would have been teammates. And then the whole journey may have been completely different. It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah, man. It's for as big as people think, you know, MMA is, it's worldwide, but it's a small circle. It's a small community. Everybody knows everybody. And, yeah, I forgot about that, man. I forgot that we were talking to you guys about me coming over there because I couldn't wrestle. I needed to wrestle, man.
And you went to American Top Team and completely rounded out that game. Champ, I know you're going to go get a haircut. I don't know who cuts your hair in Lafayette. At times it looks good. Other times it seems as though your part is off. I don't know. You need to talk to your guy. But I appreciate the time. And before we go, Dustin, you want to say anything about that? Who's your barber, man?
My buddy Brian, man. He goes by Lil Spooty right here. Lafayette, Louisiana, man. I'm about to go meet up with him.
Hey, your part is not crooked. It's probably much better than my hairline, you know. So,
hey, if you can't.
I want to say the hairline joke before you do it. I got to say the hairline joke before you do it.
The what?
The hairline joke. I got to mention my hairline before you do it, because you know that's where you come.
Okay, right. I don't stoop that low, man. That's not out of your control.
Yeah, right. You definitely stooped that low.
You got it. You can't see the
video. I can't fault a man for genetics. Come on now.
you can't see the video, Dustin, but if you see it later, DC looks like he's been at LeBron's guy. His hairline is creeping forward.
Oh, man.
That's the first thing we said when we saw him this morning is like, you've been hanging out with LeBron? Like, what's going on here?
Hey, Poirier, you need to go see LeBron's guy. LeBron's shit is strong right now, man.
Hey, I wish you would have given us the opportunity to do this interview from the Poirier Mansion down in Lafayette, Louisiana. And before I let you go, I have to make mention, Nick, Dennis, the man Dustin Poirier has that beautiful home in the hills of Lafayette, but also he is getting presented the keys to the city this week, right, Dustin?
Tomorrow, man. Tomorrow is going down.
That's what the haircut's for.
Dustin Poirier gets the key to the city of Lafayette, Louisiana, and he also has a key to a fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov coming up very shortly. DP, thank you for joining us, man. I really appreciate it. Enjoy your time back home, and can't wait to see you, bud.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on, and come by and visit Lafayette anytime you want.
Wait, so now you have to give me an invitation. Like, I'm not from there anymore. I can't just show up.
There's a new king of Lafayette.
I think what they told me is they changed the locks when they give somebody a new key, so your key won't work no more, I think.
My key don't work no more. You are the man, Dustin. I appreciate it, brother. Hey, I'm so happy for your success, man.
Thank you so much, Daniel. I appreciate you guys, man.
All right, bro. Talk soon.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye. Now we are joined by... He's your favorite reporter. He's my favorite MMA insider. This is the man, the myth, the legend. 15-time MMA World Journalist of the Year, ESPN host, the man, Ariel Helwani. Ariel, thank you for joining us, bud.
Ooh-wee, the tables have turned.
This is crazy, right?
I heard that your podcast was struggling with some viewership and ratings and downloads, so you had to call upon the old nose to boost it up, and I would do it in a flash. Anything for my guy, DC. What an honor, what a privilege it is for you guys to have me on the show. I have to clear out a few things. I'm not going to lie. I have to clear out a few things, but I'm here and I'm ready to go.
Hey, you know, Ariel hosts a show called Ariel and the Bad Guy. Chael was busy, so we took Ariel.
And on the most important of days, the draft lottery.
That's why we got him in. This is why we got him in, because, Ariel, we want to hear the thoughts of a New York Knicks fan as the lottery is about to go down tonight in the next time that you guys could have a Patrick Ewing is sitting right atop that draft board. All you got to do is get the right ball.
Okay, honestly, all jokes aside, I am so nervous. I haven't been this nervous in a really long time for, I think, anything. Like, even my first day at ESPN paled in comparison to this. I have chest pains, tightness. I actually just went to the gym and ran for 4 miles. I haven't done that in maybe 15 years. I don't know what to do with myself. We're currently taping this, and we're still around 8 hours away at the moment from this actually going down, and I'm dreading it. I'm nervous. I'm sweaty. I feel like disappointment is coming. I'm typically a negative person, but I'm trying to stay positive and will this into existence. It has been 20 years of misery. It has been an absolute joke what this franchise has turned into. But the fact that they are bringing the big fella, 34 years ago Sunday, 34 years ago, we got the frozen envelope. The fact that they have called upon the captain, the face of the franchise, St. Patrick himself will be there representing the Knicks. I feel like that might be it. I feel like the tide may turn in our favor. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
All right, Ariel, you guys get the one. Is it Zion or bust, or do you consider, with the things that are floating out there right now, that what if you can get Anthony Davis? What if they say, hey, for the one pick, we give you Anthony Davis and our pick and some other things. I mean, is that just getting too smart for yourself? It's Zion or nothing, or do you take DeBrow?
I see what you're saying. I've thought of it, no doubt. I like the idea of a homegrown star. I like the idea of the synergy with Patrick being there and being sort of, you know, there to pass the torch, the symbolism. I like that. I mean, we're going to sign KD and Kyrie in July, so that's fait accompli.
And hey,
so
he's hopeful.
You get these two veterans, plus you add my guy Zion, maybe get another pick from the Mavs deal where we traded Kristaps, that ingrate, that Benedict Arnold who turned his back on us. I feel like things are looking up. We've got Mitchell Robinson, who's the second coming of Patrick. We've got DeAndre Jordan, a veteran at the center
Holy
position.
Holy shit,
we've
this guy's out of his mind.
We've got like Kevin Knox. We've got Alonzo Trier. Things are starting to look up at the Big Apple. We just need that first pick tonight. That's all we need.
Okay, so Nick. Yeah. Nick, I think the KD thing hits a little close to home. Is he leaving? Is he gone? Is KD gone? And is he going to New York?
I mean, I don't know why you'd leave this situation. I got to say, as a lifelong Warriors fan, the draft lottery was always the highlight of the year. Like, I'm actually jealous in a way when I hear the fear in his voice. It's like it was the greatest day. I still remember, like, well, it's the draft lottery and the draft. I still remember when we got Penny Hardaway number one, traded him for Chris Webber. I was in my dorm room in college running around high-fiving all the doorways and saying, it's over. It only lasted a year, though, so I guess you got to be careful about these things. But why would KD want to leave? I mean, he wanted the adoration. He wanted it to be his team, and he's been anointed as the best player in the world in these playoffs. And I feel like he realizes I can do that in this environment. Great group of unselfish guys, winning championships. You've got a whack job owner in New York, so even if you get there, you don't know, you know, how that's going to go.
Ariel, do you guys have a whack job owner in New York?
He is actually the X factor in all of this. I believe that you can only upset and disrespect the basketball gods so many times. And James Dolan has spit on the basketball gods. When he asked his security to cart out the legend, to drag out the
Charles
legend.
Oakley? Charles Oakley was inebriated. He was beating people. He needed to be removed from the arena.
Dude, he took a guy's season tickets away the other day because he said we need a new owner or something. It's crazy.
So yes, I won't put it in those terms, but he has certainly held us back. I hope that, you know, 20 years of suffering has been enough. And I also like the symbolism because I do believe, a lot of people don't talk about this, but I believe that there's actually a curse from Patrick Ewing. From the moment they traded him and shipped him off to Seattle, everything has gone wrong for the franchise. And so I feel like this is their way of reversing that curse. But with all due respect, Nick, I mean, to hear you say that you're actually jealous that I'm dreaming of ping pong balls going in my favor and you guys are on the verge of a three-peat and one of the greatest dynasties of all time. I mean, I appreciate you having me on the show. I appreciate you pandering to me, but come on. I would do anything to be in your position. You're jealous that I'm dreaming of some kid saving my franchise and ping pong balls coming my way. I'm jealous of you guys. You think I haven't tasted a May playoff game in like 2 decades. I want that.
Ariel,
that's
do you,
I
Ariel,
want.
Have
I
you ever, I mean, balls. When was the last time the Knicks won a championship before?
Yes, 1970 and 1973.
But those Knicks teams in the Jordan era were, I mean, they were so close so many times.
Nick, are you guys tired of winning championships? Because I'll take one of those rings. I mean, how many?
Yes.
I'll take one of those rings, Nick. We can give it to the Good Fight Foundation. Dustin Poirier just left. We'll take one of those rings that you guys don't value much, and we'll sell it for the Good Fight Foundation. How about that, Nick?
No, I mean, everyone is amazing, but the first one was like, it was like something you never thought would happen in your life. The Warriors win a championship, and there is, I believe, a lifetime of it being ingrained in you that like the struggle and the fight to get up there is the fun part, right? So the day after the championship ends, everyone's looking forward to, well, maybe a few days after the championship ends, everyone's looking forward to the fight next year. Now, I think the most concerning thing here is one of us has experienced a long period of draft lotteries. One of us is hoping to hit the jackpot tonight and get out of this long period of draft lotteries. And the other one has no idea that he's about to go on the longest streak of draft lotteries ever.
You're talking about the Rockets?
Dude, you got $120 million to Chris Paul over the next 3 years. You're totally fucked. You got the least likely.
Ariel, do you believe him? Are we going to the draft lottery here very soon, the Rockets?
No, I think they have a year or two left in them. And by the way, DC, I don't feel bad for you as well. I mean, lest we forget, 94 and 95, your Rockets broke my Knicks heart. Your Saints have won recently. I mean, let's be honest. I have not experienced a single championship of any of my teams in my lifetime. I just want one. Just give me one. That's all. I just want to know what it feels like. Hey, I don't feel bad for either of you guys.
Ariel, listen to me, brother. Listen to me, brother. Those championships, 94, 95, that championship the Saints won, those have all been crushed, stepped on, and spit on the last 2 years with the Saints football team. Every highlight I've had in sports as a fan has been completely shit on the last 2 years.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
Ariel, my son, little Daniel, look up behind me, is the beautiful kid that is, has started to fall in love with the New Orleans Saints. Last year, I go to Boston with all of my Saints gear ready to head down to Philly for the NFC Championship with my family after I beat Volk and Ozdemir. The miracle in Minneapolis happened. My son cries. My son cries. Steve Becker, my former boss at Fox, said, tell your boy that he just witnessed the worst thing that he could witness as a fan. Like, in his first year truly caring, it cannot get worse, Ariel. Right? You even said it. I called you because you're a sports guy. Go, hey, man, my son just experienced heartbreak. He walked across the aisle of the hall to his mom's room in tears because the Saints got beat. Fast forward 1 year. I mean, Ariel.
It's destiny.
Fast forward 1 year in the thing down in New Orleans. I mean, we're celebrating. Bump, bump. Chopper style, chop, chop, chopper style. We're chopper styling all the way down Bourbon Street on Sunday. And then the pass interference that is now such an egregious call. You hear, I've been watching Stephen A. Such an egregious call that they have changed the rule to where you can now replay pass interference. My son experiences that from inside the dome. It could not be worse, Ariel. Everything else is out the window.
It builds character, though. How old is your son? 6, 7?
At 7 and 8, he dealt with those two heartbreaks. Perfect.
Yeah, he got it out of the way. Now it can only go up from here.
Now he appreciates it when it comes. I mean, think about if your son was a Warriors fan. He doesn't appreciate all this. He'd be born in first class. He'd be born driving a Mercedes. They don't appreciate the heartbreak. I mean, if you told me right now when I'm 50, the Knicks will get the title, I'll be like, all right, it was all worth it. I just don't think it's ever going to happen as long as James Dolan is our owner. So I feel like we have just this black cloud hanging over us. But he's going to appreciate it in 5, 6, 7, 8 years when they do win it, because they will eventually win it. Everyone wins it except for the teams that I root for. So the Buffalo Bills will never win the championship. And he will look back and you will both reminisce over those times and you will actually appreciate those heartbreak moments even more so. You know that. You've been there.
I think we have one more year. Next year is our last best chance as a Saints fan. Does your boy like the Knicks too?
So they're a little slow. You know for some reason, my kids, I don't know if they're contrarians or they just like to stir the pot, but maybe they get it from their old man. But they have done a great job of trying to root for all the teams that I don't want them to root for. So I'm trying to explain to them, like, okay, so I'm a baseball fan. My Expos don't exist, so I've adopted the Blue Jays. They say, well, why would we root for a Toronto team? We're from New York. We're going with the Yankees. Okay, I'm a Canadiens fan. I'm from Montreal. Hockey is king in Montreal. Why would we root for Montreal? We're Rangers fans. Okay. So then I was like, all right, you're born in New York. Perfect. The Buffalo Bills are the only team that actually plays in the state of New York. The Giants and Jets don't play there. No, all our friends like the Giants were Giants fans. And then I thought I got them with the Knicks. Because then I was like, okay, perfect. There's nothing else to say. Oh, but actually, for the first 2 years of our lives, we lived in Brooklyn, so we're Nets fans. What?
Holy smokes.
Nothing. We don't have anything in common. It's horrible.
Now, what happens in the worst case scenario? Well, knock on wood for you. What happens if let's say the Hawks come up with the first pick? I've been loading up on Trae Young basketball cards, so I'm hoping for anything to get those things going up. And then the Nets get KD and Kyrie. Then what do you do as a Knicks fan?
I literally just felt like my Adam's apple going in my stomach. That is doomsday. That might be it. You know, it's
Nick
funny
just,
because
Nick
someone
just gave
actually
you something
called
you haven't even thought about.
Oh my! I yes, in my mind, KD and Kyrie are done deals, so I'm not even thinking of that. But someone, you know, when Kristaps got traded, I was actually in San Jose working on this thing that's coming out about DC, and I saw my phone and I saw Kristaps got traded, and I was so mad. And I went on Twitter and I publicly unfollowed the Knicks, and I said, "Today is the last day of my Knicks fandom." And 12 hours later, I took that back because that's just a part of being a fan. You hate them, you love them, you go back and forth. And someone actually called me out about that today. He's like, "What happened to you not being a Knicks fan?" And I said, "Listen, the New York Knicks have not earned the benefit of the doubt for all the dumb things that they have done over the last 20 years. The first thing I'm going to think about is that you guys blew this. Now, over time, it kind of feels like, all right, maybe they got it right. Opened up some cap space. Kristaps was a problem. His brother was a problem. I feel a little better about it all, right? But at that moment, this joke of a franchise did not earn my trust. So the first thing I thought about in that moment when I was at AK, when I found out about the news, was you blew it again. So you have to earn my trust back. And how do you earn it back? You call Patrick Ewing to save the day today. You sign KD. You sign Kyrie. We're back.
You know, I was in a meeting right after we traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut, and I actually questioned Joe Lacob and even Jerry West was in that meeting, and I was like, what are we doing? Why would we trade Monte Ellis? Like, what if Curry hurts his ankle again? Like, this is crazy. I could not have been more wrong, but I was
good thing they didn't listen to you.
No, absolutely. we were only allowed to talk at the meeting when no one was listening. It was like a one-way thing, but it was I think without the heartbreak, without the
ups and downs,
could
you imagine that Ariel
no
Dinkabal fucking sank that entire battleship? If he could have just said, "Hey, I don't agree," he would have sank that shit, man.
That would have been it.
You know what's crazy? It's crazy how many of us have no fucking idea. Like, the things where it's like, it seems obvious. Like, to me, it seemed completely obvious. I remember a long time ago, Jason Kidd we'd created these lithographs, and he was signing them all. And I was like, "Who do you want the Mavericks to draft?" And he's like, "Oh, no doubt about it. Mario Bennett's the best player in the draft." And it was like, even a player at that level, he had, you know, if he was the GM, he would have drafted Mario Bennett over, I don't remember if it was Mashburn or someone like that. It's crazy. None of us have any idea. Except DC. He thinks Chris Paul's the answer for the 4 years down the road.
This dude tried to tell me the other day, Ari. He goes, "I don't think there's ever been a star that's more unlikable than Chris Paul."
No, but I know this. I don't think this.
He said this to me. He sent a text to me. He goes, "I have never seen a star more unlikable than Chris Paul."
There's no doubt about it.
I don't find Chris Paul unlikable.
Dude, he's always just
intense.
Complaining and scrapping and poking and prodding. And
right.
Then you didn't like Jordan. Because he plays like Michael Jordan.
No.
With that intensity.
That's a bit of a stretch. He seems like the kind of guy that you love if he's on your team, but you can't stand him if he's not on your team, because I'm a little indifferent to him because, you know, they're Western Conference. I don't have those feelings towards them. But I know actually I've actually talked to a few referees, NBA officials, who have told me that unanimously he is their least favorite guy to ref.
What?
Because he's constantly complaining. He's constantly getting in their face. He's rude. So I'm not surprised to hear other people share that opinion. Look, he's a great player. He's an amazing leader to have on the team. I actually think that your owner may have given the Warriors some bulletin board material for the next few years, because I don't know if you saw Mr. Fertitta, cousin of the great Lorenzo Fertitta, said that they're going to kick their ass in the next few years, and I think that he is probably going to eat those words in the coming years.
Well, if all those guys start bailing out of the Bay Area like it's thought to happen this year. I heard that this is the summer.
I think it's like I think it
kind of falls apart.
I think it's like more like people are hoping than thinking. Who you guys got? Who you guys got in the? We got the final four here. Who's going to win the championship?
I mean, the Warriors are going to fucking win, dude. I mean, what are you talking about? It'll be the Warriors and the Raptors, though. But hey,
Raptors winning, baby. Raptors all the way. Kawhi is going to give us the championship, and then he'll go sign with the Clippers, and that's okay. You can live with that in Canada. But
you think Kawhi's out? You think Kawhi's out?
The world, and then sign with the Clippers.
You think Kawhi's out?
Oh, 100%. That's an even bigger done deal than KD to the Knicks.
They love him up there. They love Kawhi.
Does he like living in Canada? He's a California guy. And the Lakers, too much pizzazz, too much razzmatazz, too much attention, too much drama. Clippers are perfect for him. I mean, the Clippers have a really good thing going right now. It's really impressive what they've been able to do. and have kind of proven that you don't really need that superstar to get to, you know, the 8-7 seed. He comes in, puts them over the top. They've got all this money. I mean, I feel like that's a no-brainer for him.
Ariel, I don't want to keep you much longer, but we got to pivot a little bit from basketball to MMA, which is what you are the GOAT in. Talk about some of these big fights that were just announced. You know, Pettis Diaz. I hear they're trying to do Holloway, Edgar. Just some big fights on the horizon.
That's a done deal. That's a done deal for UFC 240, July 27th in New York City. You know, they wanted to go to Madison Square Garden July 27th, but it all hinged on getting Conor back. And I actually had Anthony Pettis on my show yesterday, who told me they offered him Conor McGregor for that date, but it just didn't materialize. I think Conor's probably going to come back if he comes back this year towards the end of the year. But wow, what about UFC 241? What about that main event, DC, Stipe, two, great. But then they come out with this rabbit out of the hat, the return of Nate Diaz, who I had been told over the last couple months was just itching, like really was motivated to get back in there, have a fight, get back on a regimen, start getting focused again. And I spoke to Anthony Pettis yesterday on my show on Monday. I've talked to Pettis a bunch. I mean, I've been covering Pettis now probably for 10 years since his early WEC days. I've never heard him speak like this before. You know him, DC. He's kind of, you know, short with words. He's cool. He doesn't really talk a lot. Certainly doesn't talk a lot of trash. He despises Nate Diaz. Like he said multiple times, this is personal. I would have chosen if I had the choice between Conor and Nate, I would have taken the Nate fight because I hate this guy. I really don't like this guy. I can't wait to put my hands on him. I truly dislike him. And I've never heard Anthony Pettis talk about someone like that before. So it was interesting because sometimes with Pettis, it's a little hard to get information. And speaking of hard to get information out of, later on in the show, I had probably the hardest guest to get information out of, Stipe Miocic. And holy smokes, the things that he said about you, DC, I don't know if you heard the interview, but he called you an idiot. He said that you speak out of both sides of your mouth, that you make up things, that, you know, this idea that you're calling him entitled is just ludicrous. He said it's going to be your last fight on August 17th. I was taken aback. I didn't know there was this kind of bad blood.
Stipe said he's going to retire me.
Oh, yeah. He said, that's it. You're done.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm going to beat his ass. I'm just going to beat his ass, Ariel. That's fine. But thank you for joining
that's
our
it.
Show.
Because you see how I tried to turn the tables on you there.
I know. Well, he's seeing red now. He can't. DC literally, if you see him on the screen, he can't think. He's just seeing red. He lost all train of thought.
Thank you for killing my vibe. You can do that at times. You're good for that at times. Hey, man, I appreciate you coming to the show. You know, first time we've ever done this, and it's not even really an interview. We just kind of shot the shit, which is usually the best time. So thank you, man. Thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it. I appreciate everything you do for the sport. Keep doing you, man. You are the best.
Oh, thank you. It really is an honor to be asked to be on, and I'm glad that you guys are back. Thank you for having me. You've always been there for me. I'll always be there for you. Anytime you want me back, I'll be there.
Thank you, my man. Appreciate it. Good luck tonight.
Go Knicks!
Good luck.
Thank you.
Boys, that was the great Ariel Helwani. He's the man.
That was
right?
Awesome.
He's the man.
That was awesome.
I just kept seeing the phone ring, and I didn't know who it was.
Yeah,
you didn't give us any warning.
You know, we're back. You know, might as well get two guests, right? Might as well get two to get it started. But I mean, the best thing about speaking to Ariel is that he's just he understands sports, right? If you want to talk sports. He's a guy that you can talk sports to, and he's very, very he's very aware of his relationships. He doesn't like to become friends with the athletes, right? Because you have to separate your job and your friendships. But being that we work together at Fox all that time, and just being able to talk sports, occasionally I can get the dude to talk to me about sports and not always on the record about what I'm doing with my career. So. Not many guys want to talk about football. MMA guys. You know, I mean, I go to Kane. I'm like, yo, Kane, did you see what happened with the Suns? He's like, who plays for the Suns? It's like, I don't have many friends that want to talk sports with me. And occasionally I can get this dude, especially on a day like this with the draft lottery, to talk about sports. And it was good to have him on the show.
I think I'm gonna be in New York when the draft is.
We should
go to the draft. I think it's June 20th.
Really?
I thought it was Madison Square Garden, but I think it's in Brooklyn. I looked it up. I was like, oh, shit, am I finally going to be in New York when there's the draft?
Are you going to go?
I don't know. I might. I don't know. I don't know how to get around New York. I don't know how far away Brooklyn is.
It's kind of far. Like, everything's far. It's like you're in New York, and it's like you think you're going from Brooklyn to Manhattan. takes you an hour. You know, it's like,
yeah, I was really hoping an hour. It used to always be Madison Square Garden. That would have been perfect. But Brooklyn, I don't know how he'd get there. It's crazy to see how far he's gotten in his career.
He started,
insane. Yeah,
to ESPN, and not only just ESPN, right? So the guy will do ESPN MMA shows, but also one time I'm watching a basketball game. He was like doing stuff at the Oklahoma City Thunder game.
Yeah,
now he's right all at the over. End of the season when they're in the middle of the playoff race, and I think he's doing something with the draft. You know, he's doing some sort of hosting for the draft, but. Just a massive basketball fan, and he's got a good personality, and it's showing over at ESPN because they're using him in so many ways.
How similar is the feeling when you think about that pass interference call, and then you hear him telling you that Stipe's talking shit? Like,
well, this is a difference, right? The Stipe thing I can do something about, right? I can beat him up about.
But does it get you?
That's probably the best. That's the best, right? Stipe can say, oh, he's an idiot and he's this and he's that. But then I can just kick his ass again.
But does
right?
it get you?
Ultimately, I had the last laugh in the whole thing with me and Stipe, and I get to do it again. So that's kind of how that thing plays out.
But when you hear that, instantly when you hear it, does it like make your blood move a little faster, or is it just kind of whatever?
Well, you know, we're kind of like, we're fighters, we're a different breed, you know. We're like, oh, you motherfucker. Like, right away, I'm like, oh, Stipe, you son of a bitch. But I like it, though, because first time he's like all chummy and he's all quiet and he doesn't want to build a fight. Now at least he's like being vocal about how he feels, you know. Yeah. Like, be vocal. Tell me how you feel and tell me how much you want to kick my ass so that when I kick your ass again, then you're like in a dark room, you know, like just done. Like, he's going to be done. Like, after this one, it'll be very hard for Stipe to get back to where he once was, because this one's going to break him. Because I know what the second Jones fight did to me. It almost broke me.
Yeah.
But all my life experiences, you know, my father, my cousin, my daughter, my roommate, all those life experiences allowed me to keep things in perspective, whereas he really hasn't had to do that. So when he loses in this spot, I don't think he'll be able to recover from it. It's going to be too much.
Yeah. I do think the Pettis-Diaz fight, like, I was excited just, you know, to see Nate come back, and then Pettis is always exciting, but I had no idea there was this bad blood, and I was listening to that yesterday, and I was like, oh, that got me, like, amped up times 1,000, because you really want, I mean, the Diaz is going to be able to manufacture hostility no matter what, but yep. I wish you could be a fly on the wall when he's listening to Pettis talking about how much he fucking hates him and all what he's going to do to him.
He's going to be so fired up.
He's going to be just, you know, you want
that's going to be a good fight.
When they fight, you want them to feel like they're going to war, which they always say they feel like, but now it's going to be, that's going to be good.
There's just something about Nate Diaz, you know, he's like got that, he's got that swagger, that Northern California type of, you know, like, you know, I am what I am. I'm the Bay, you know, I am the Bay, you know, and I'm a guy that's from there. I represent this, you know, Stockton, and it's like, if I want to fight. You know, I'm from a scrappy place. You know what? We had to scrap for everything, and I just want to go find the fight. And Anthony Pettis is that guy that will engage you in that fight. You want to fight? I'm here, right? Yeah. That's Pettis, and it's a great fight. And look, I can't be disappointed about the way this thing is starting. I mean, me and Stipe, Diaz, Pettis, Costa versus Romero. I mean, it's just three fights.
Yeah.
No, they just got awesome. Three fights done, and those are the three.
We might have to do a remote from down there, Dennis. Yeah,
that'd be fun.
I don't cut weight anymore.
Just give me.
I don't cut weight anymore, so we can be down in Anaheim on a Wednesday, doing a talking live. We can do it at the open workouts. Yeah. We can sit at the open workouts and do a talking. Yeah, I don't cut weight. I'm not dying anymore when I'm at the fight.
I feel 205,
like, I was dying. I get to enjoy the ride. Yeah. He's got all my power. That's why Stipe got it all. Like, he got all my power.
Yeah. Is there something different since the, it feels like lately, like when he was saying, Ariel was saying that Nate's been itching to fight in training. It feels like Pettis said the same thing. There's more guys that have just decided, I'm going to just keep, and Dustin said the same thing. Like, I'm just going to start training, and somewhere when I'm training, a fight's going to come along. Versus before, it felt like guys sat around, got out of camp, then they'd get a fight, then they'd start training. Has there been like some memo saying, guys, I want all you guys staying in fight shape. We're gonna start scheduling these things closer.
We never stopped. Like, we never would stop training. We would always just kind of be in the gym. You know, even me, like at my age now, like I'm there 3 days a week. like 3 days. It's not five and six, but like 3 days a week, I try to do something. I either run, I eat the pads, I either spar, I wrestle. I'm doing something 3 days like, a week, I mean, just because
Dennis before. Is, Dennis is more active than you when you're not in camp.
Yes, for sure. But before I was there every day, right? When I first started, I would go Monday to Friday because I had nothing else going on.
Yeah.
Now I have so much shit from TV to this to that to this that I'm always on the run. But every time I'm in town, I try to go to the gym. Now that I can train again after my back. But it's the same. But now guys are like, they're like, I took fights on short notice. I fought Bigfoot Silva with 5 weeks before a fight just because I was training. It was a matter of just amping it up a little bit to get ready to be to go 15 minutes in the fight. But guys are getting the call now. Like, they know that the UFC does not want to cancel fights. They don't want to remove guys from the card. So your opportunity could be any day. You just got to be prepared to go, so you got to stay in shape. But again, those guys are taking it to the next level still. They're training, but they're not like training as if they're getting ready for a fight until they get that call.
Yeah.
You know, this whole Dustin Poirier, Khabib thing is going to be phenomenal. It's going to be a great fight. Poirier's so big now at 155. Isn't it hard to believe that he was a 45-pounder before? He was like, you see how big he looked against Max Holloway?
Yeah.
Just a massive guy for the lightweight division, and he was going all the way down to 45.
It was weird because I didn't realize how tall Max was, and then he thought, and you're like, oh, Max's a big guy, but then he just wasn't as thick. You know, Poirier is like...
No, not as thick. You saw Dustin's back? It was crazy how big his back was.
Yeah. You all right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I coughed.
You just thought about how many. All of a sudden, Chris Paul staying for 4 more years popped through your head. You fucking almost lost it.
It's not bad. Like, Chris Paul, man, let me tell you something, man. Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, James Harden, Eric Gordon.
Dude, you're falling asleep thinking about this. You know when you go play basketball at like 24-hour or whatever, and there's always the guy that's just like fucking barreling around. He's gonna hurt someone. He's like always falling in everyone's knees and fucking. That's Chris Paul now. In that series, it was like, let's just finish this fucking game before Chris Paul rolls into someone's knees or smacks someone in the finger or something and just hurts someone.
It's Portland. Is it Portland? You guys have Portland in the Western Conference Finals?
Yeah, you got Dame Lillard coming home to Oakland. Either the Warriors are going to close out Oakland or he's going to close out Oakland. It's going to be crazy.
Portland beat who in the second round? Denver?
Portland just beat Denver. 7 games.
Could you imagine that?
The Rockets
being on that side?
Dude, CJ McCollum was nuts in Game 7.
But the Rockets weren't going to beat...
If the Rockets would have got past the Warriors... They were not going to get past
Portland. You believe this?
Yeah.
Or are you just fucking with me?
No, I think the Warriors will get past Portland, but I think Portland would have beat the Rockets.
Why?
I just think the guards match up, and neither team really has an inside game.
They play Toronto in the finals, though, right? You think Toronto beats Milwaukee?
I think Milwaukee wins.
That dude is...
There was some article, I can't remember the details, but it was like in around December, January or something. It was an article saying, comparing all the things that this Bucks team has in common with the first Warriors team that won the championship in 2015. And like, basically, like, by the end of the article, you're like, fuck, the Bucks are going to win the championship. And then you went back to the Bucks. But Giannis is like, I mean, we've never seen anything like this.
I've never seen anybody like Giannis. Like, I heard Giannis is like, and I heard he likes being there. So it's like when his rookie contract's over, he's not going to go find in the biggest market that he can go play. Yeah.
But he's like,
he enjoys playing in Milwaukee.
And he started like so skinny and kind of like gangly, and now he's just fucking ferocious. Like
he's a monster, bro.
Yeah. He just, and he's like got that, like, I'm going to dunk on you every time. I'm going to block every shot. He's got that rage in him.
Kawhi, Ariel says Kawhi is out of Toronto. Like, I don't get that.
Well,
I feel like that's a great fit for him.
It seems like a good fit for him, but he got traded there. There was something about wanting to get out of San Antonio, so maybe he just wants to be back in L.A., but he seems kind of like a... It seems like a lot of these guys probably have no idea what they want to do, you know?
I saw him on the post-game interview after he hit that fantastic shot. It just looked like that was the last place that he wanted to be in the world. I don't,
Which get is why, it. Which I is why it seems like him. He was the reason you think maybe not LA. Like, he just seems like he doesn't want to talk to the media. He's not really comfortable in that role. He doesn't really doesn't ever seem to seek it out. So a place like Toronto could be perfect, but you never. It's like Paul George. Why didn't Paul George just stay in Indiana if he was going to end up in Oklahoma City?
It's the same exact thing, yeah. Right? It's the same. Like, it's still a small market team. Like, it's like he stayed in Oklahoma. But, you know, with Kawhi Leonard, I watch him play basketball. And I remember when they drafted him, right? When the Spurs drafted him, I was like, okay, this kid's good. But you never could have imagined that he would be this. And this happens a lot, right? Like, even Kyrie, right? Kyrie plays at Duke. He averages about 14 points a game, and they take him number one. I'm like, why would they take him?
Yeah.
Huh?
And he was hurt half the season, too.
Yeah, I'm like, why would they take this kid number one? And then he gets to the pros, and Kyrie is literally maybe the greatest ball handler I've ever seen, right? He can score, you know, whenever he wants. He just seems disinterested in Boston right now. He seems like he's just kind of ready to get out of there.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that he became that good. And then my cousin will tell me, my cousin PJ will say some shit like, well, the spacing's different in the NBA. Like, what do you mean the spacing's different in the NBA? He's like, well, you got to think, every guy that is in college playing Kyrie Irving, knowing that Kyrie Irving's the number one draft pick, will give him his absolute best. Whereas when you get to the NBA, those guys aren't going at you as if you're just like the man and they have to show themselves against you. That's his theory.
I don't think that makes sense because the guys in the NBA are so much better than the average guy in college that even a guy in the NBA's 80% is probably better than the regular guys in college.
Yeah, so why was Kyrie only getting 14, but then the pros he can get 23, 25, and it seems easy at times.
Well, I guess in college they could just back off and kind of all clog the lanes and all go after him. And in the NBA, they got to respect everybody a little bit more.
It just feels like they're playing harder in college.
Yeah. Curry is the craziest one. Like, there's never been a player. I mean, he came in.
He just always wrapping back around to the Warriors.
Well, no, but he was like
slick. You're so slick.
Well, he was Rookie of the Year, and then he hurt his ankle and all that. But like, there's never been a guy who, you know, first couple of years was good, but not like generational or like great. And then all of a sudden, just bam, just went from like 2, 3, 4 years in doing good to just becoming the like man. One of the best.
MVP.
Which is
MVP.
Crazy. Usually these guys come in and like, you know, first year, second year, like, oh, this guy's different. He came in and was like, all right, you got your starting point guard, but nothing like he's going to be MVP. He's going to win multiple championships. He's going to change the way kids play the game.
That's what I think he's done more than anybody I've ever seen in my life. I don't think anybody. It was like when Michael Jordan was dunking. Everybody just wanted to dunk, right? Yeah. Like I had a basketball hoop and it was tiny. I wanted to dunk. I wanted to do what Michael Jordan did. Now, you watch a high school basketball game, they're all shooting the ball from damn near half court because they want to be like Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And they want to dribble. It's like his swagger is just so – his swagger in his game is just so – like it's just off the chains. And like him and Klay Thompson, it was like two little light-skinned brothers. So good. Like, I mean, they're probably the two least threatening guys in the entire NBA, right? Two little pretty boys.
Yeah.
But them dudes are killers.
Yeah.
On that between that in that 90 feet or whatever. Those dudes are so good.
They get underestimated for their toughness just cuz they're
cuz their appearance so much two pretty boys.
Yeah, their appearance and their shooting ability. You know who predicted all of this though? State Farm. So State Farm had Chris Paul in commercials,
yep.
Right? And then was that the State Farm was the one right where he had his twin, right?
Yeah, his brother. Yeah, it was like Chris Paul and then Clark or Cliff.
And Chris Paul was the star of that series, and as the Clippers, he was kind of like, hey, this is the point guard in the league. And then they had this commercial one year where they showed Chris Paul and his twin going down an escalator. And they introduced Steph Curry and his twin going up the escalator. And that was the changing of the guard. That was where there was no turning back. The State Farm basically said, here's one guy on his way down.
But Chris Paul's not on his way down. Another guy
on his way to the top. Well, he's already down.
He's not down. He's still one of the best point guards in the entire league. What are you talking about? It's like now you're just taking personal attacks on Chris Paul.
No. I do think Chris Paul is really good, but I don't mean he's down. But he's not going to get any better. He's gonna slowly.
Well, he is who he is. He's gonna slow down though.
And he's not who he was 2-3 years ago. He's not as fast. He doesn't. He can't create his own shot quite as well. So,
but he's made up for it because his shooting ability seems to be even better than it was back then.
I don't know. He used to be automatic and he used to be able to get his shot off. I do think he's the least likable star in the league. And I don't think he's terrible, but I do think it's a terrible contract they gave him.
Gave him the max.
You got Harden, Capella. You didn't need to give someone $40 million a year. It's going to handcuff you for the next 3 years. There's always things after the playoffs like, oh, the Sixers should trade Ben Simmons for Chris Paul. It's like, why would the Sixers do that? Anyways, you know what? I think you just look. You've achieved so much. You've gotten so much. You've got, like you said, the most beautiful family in the world behind you. You said,
yeah. Look at me. And you see it? Look behind us.
Oh yeah. The price you have to pay in exchange for all this glory is the Saints and the Rockets.
It's you know. It could be worse, right? We lost the NFC Championship. We lost in the NBA conference finals and then the NBA semifinals. It's not like we're losing.
No.
Before we're getting to the postseason. I'm in the postseason every year, but then I'm dealing with heartbreak. I'm just dealing with heartbreak consistently. But it's okay, though. I'll stay with those two teams. I love those two teams. I do respect and like the Warriors, too, though, you know, being from the Bay Area. So if there was anybody they were going to lose to, I'd prefer it be the Warriors. And
I don't like those series because for me, I'm like, if there's anyone the Warriors had to lose to, if the Warriors couldn't win a championship, I'd rather Portland wins a championship. But then it's a slippery slope because then you start like almost justifying. It's like, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, you don't want to play in a team that you're okay with.
I want
them
to hate them. You know, I want to play the Rockets and the Clippers every time and just be like, the Cavs and just be like.
I just remember we used to fucking crush y'all. Like, me and you would go to those Rockets-Warriors games, and I would just be in your face laughing.
At the Warriors games, it used to be the all you looked forward to at a Warriors games was there was going to be one run where we'd maybe get within 6 to 8 points and the crowd would believe and then that would go away. That was a successful Warriors game. Is like if they could just make a run.
I used to sit right next to him. We'd be right next to the scorer's table and I'd just be laughing in his face. Every single time I would just laugh at his ass because we were winning the games.
Yeah.
We would win all the time.
Now we only win by 12 and not everyone scored 30 points and everyone's arguing about why it was a bad game. And it's like, fuck, you got to remember where it came from. Look, DC, I am confident by the time you're 87 years old, the Rockets and the Saints will have both won championships.
I seriously believe next year we have a shot at winning a world title in New Orleans. I really do. And I believe
I don't dislike the Saints. I think it's incredibly bad luck the Saints have run into the last 2 years.
It's crazy. It's so crazy that it's happened that way, and it's happened to my boy. You know, like, it's nuts, man. I mean, there were people crying walking out of that Superdome after that game. It was bad, man. It was bad. You know, man, yeah, it sucks. You know, but I think next year we got a shot, but it is what it is. I've got some friends now that play for the team, and everything I'm hearing is that it's positive. It's very positive as we head into next season. Hey, look, this was a good show. This is a good show. Two guests, Poirier, Helwani. You know, we've been
came back
for
with a vengeance.
While.
Yes.
To be back. We
came back with a vengeance.
A vengeance.
Had to. Now I'm excited.
It's going to be tough to top next
week. I'm doing
this
every week. And look, in the morning, it helps because I get to do this before I go to practice. I'm not doing it at night. I think the energy will be higher. We'll always have fun. And I miss you, boys.
Yeah, we missed you, too. It's good to
be
around. And I noticed this time no Xbox while we're doing this. You are committed.
No Xbox, man. I'm just sitting here in my living room.
This is a champ
camp. It's not dark.
Champ.
Remember before I was like in a bunker? It's like, oh my God, are you in a bunker, dude?
Yeah.
I think that was playing into me being a little bit tired. But we have heard the people that have said we want you guys to come back. So we're back now, and I'm excited about it.
I'm excited, too.
Yeah. Oh, Dennis. I forgot Dennis was here.
Yeah, I know.
Shit.
I was driving the train. Sorry.
This is driving the train, watching the gear. But just know we do have some more challenges coming up whenever we head up north. Not with Dennis. Oh, and the chef. Guys, the chef moved out.
What?
We don't have access to the chef anymore.
Where'd he go?
Chef lives with DeRon Wynn and those guys in Gilroy. Remember that before? Five minutes with the chef?
Yeah.
Hey, Justin, how's this? Yeah. It was the funniest shit in the world, man. It was the funniest shit.
Can't believe he moved out.
Oh,
The chef moved out. The chef moved out. So with a heavy heart, after the chef is gone, we're signing out. Talking Talkers back. Daniel Cormier, Nick Swimmer, and Dennis Rodriguez. Thank you guys for joining us, and see you next week. Hollywood Cole, I'm with Marla G, bro, flying Holly Grove chicks to my house.